Welcome to Mastermind's Parent Power podcast for parents of children with autism. Learn from fellow parents, professionals, and other individuals who have helped to support, nurture, and create the tapestry of autism support and services. The ultimate goal of Mastermind is to empower parents and provide them with the tools they need to help their child reach their full potential. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thanks so much for joining us, Rose, today on our podcast. Just to introduce Rose, Rose is an ASHA certified speech language pathologist. She is also a BCBA. So Rose has taken her experience and her expertise, has founded ABA Speech. She offers professional development courses, consultation, products geared towards helping autistic students find their voice. She also hosts the Autism Outreach podcast, which is a weekly show about autism and communication. Rose is passionate about helping students become more independent communicators. So thanks, Rose, for joining us today. And I'm wondering if you don't mind telling everybody just a little bit about how you got started in the autism world.
Yeah, funny enough, my mom was a teacher. Parents both retired educators. My mom was teaching a class for seniors about what do you want to do when you grow up? And I was a senior as well. I took a survey and it said I should be a speech therapist. And I was like, I have no idea what that is. But we had a family friend that was a speech therapist. So I shadowed the family friend before I started college. And I loved it. It was working with people every day, which I like. It was science related, which I also enjoyed. And there was just a lot of variety in our field. Our scope is so broad. And so I declared my major and I just never looked back. Got all my degree, my master's, 6 years, and became a speech therapist. And I had a really cool clinical externship where we had kids with autism, and they were kids who were not yet speaking. They engaged in unsafe problem behavior that was a barrier to learning. And while I love serving all the students, those were the students that I just couldn't wait to see during the day. And so I have just over the past 20 years, always taken positions that would allow me to work solely with autistic learners. And so I had a position with the Cleveland Clinic, and I was a speech therapist at the time. It was, oh my goodness, it was a very long time ago. And I learned about applied behavior analysis, and I had a student who was 18. He had no way to communicate despite being in specialized instruction in a public school setting. And we used ABA and speech therapy to help this student use a device for the first time. And I'll just never forget seeing him be able to request music and to see him being able to request a walk for the first time. And I thought, I need to learn about ABA. I want to learn more about this. And so then I went ahead and I took all my courses and the test and the supervision to be a BCBA. And I've been duly certified for the past 12 years and have been practicing as a speech therapist the past 20. So there are less than 515 people worldwide who are duly certified as a speech therapist and a BCBA. And I really just love being able to help my clients and now this larger audience with my business, talking about how ABA and speech therapy together can really help our students who are stuck on their communication journey.
Wow, that is fascinating. I love how you just continue to learn and grow, even though it meant going back for a lot more coursework, a lot of, you know, hard work. Yes. And in the field. Mm-hmm. Definitely your experience working with kids with autism and enjoying that thrill and that challenge of working with individuals who are not just straight up speech, right? So there are problematic behaviors, there are barriers to learning, but there's so much gratification with breaking those barriers and getting through and helping children communicate, like you said, for the first time ever. How do you feel your dual certification of both speech therapist and BCBA help you help individuals and their families? Because definitely as an interventionist, you have a lot of interaction with families. So whether it's the parent or it's siblings, how do you combine your experience and expertise in two fields to help the families?
It really has allowed me to be able to be a valuable part of the team. So I am duly certified, but usually when I'm on a team, I'm either getting paid as a speech therapist or I'm getting paid as a BCBA. But I can navigate those environments. So I know how to talk to the parents about, well, what's happening at ABA. I know how to talk to obviously the BCBA or the RBT or staff about What does this look like in ABA, or what are they working on in that programming? You know, I understand the assessments. It's very easy for me to build that bridge. And when I was seeing clients, I have a small private practice here in my hometown. And when I was seeing clients in their homes, I've kind of taken that off my plate recently, but it was nice for me to be able to help them navigate just the public school system and what their rights are as a parent. And we have a great district where I live, but parents are just, sometimes they're timid. Well, can I go in and observe? Am I allowed to do this? And I don't have a wing of my business that's advocacy, but I do some parent coaching because parents really need that support, especially if this is their first child. This is their only child that has autism and they're new to autism. They're new to services. And I like being able to explain everything to them because this has been my whole entire life, the past 20 years. So it's something that I enjoy doing and just showing them how I can model that collaboration. We can have team meetings with the BCBA or the SLP, and then we can go forward and help their child increase their independent communication.
As a professional, from your vantage point, what would you recommend to parents of a newly diagnosed child?
I would say try not to get too overwhelmed. Try to find one, maybe mentor, or sometimes a parent support group I think is good, because I think when you're going through anything, it can feel isolating and you feel like I'm alone here. I would say, you know, I think it's great to get your child evaluated at the school district if they're at that correct age, you know, going to turn 3, and just see what the school district is going to offer you. You know, I've had families that I've worked with privately who have done some public school, special education preschool, and then some ABA, and then have me as the speech therapist, and that you can really do those things. It is really your right to have a dialogue about what you want to do intervention wise for your child. But I think getting the assessments, getting on the wait list, unfortunately, you know, trying to find somebody to help. That's kind of what's nice about virtual. I do international consults and coaching for parents who, you know, they just literally in some countries don't have providers who provide the services that we do. So I think just trying to get those assessments so you can get intervention. And then as a parent, really kind of interviewing the providers. Not everybody's going to be the right fit for you. And so I think asking those questions and just getting to know people. You know, these people will probably be in your home if your child is young, and you want to feel comfortable about that.
So taking an active role in the therapy process, not considering yourself an outsider, but really gaining that knowledge, creating mm-hmm. the rapport that you need to work with the individuals who are working with your child. I do think that anybody who works with families is going to be receptive to that. And they really want parents to be involved. Is that your experience as well?
Absolutely. And my friend, Dr. Mary Barbera, has this really great book. And she says, you know, the parent, and she's a parent of an autistic child. And she says, you know, the parents steer the ship. And that's really the truth. You do have to be involved. It's a lot to undertake. It's extremely taxing, I'm sure, emotionally and physically. But I think to make sure that everything is going okay with the intervention team, you really do need to be a part of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I agree with the piece of parents really steering the ship. I like that analogy. Here at Mastermind, we value very much the parent piece. So having a parent involved is always a plus, and a parent always knows their child best. So while interventionists and therapists might have great strategies that a parent might not know about, a parent knows the nuances and the details of their own child. So trusting the parent and knowing that the parent is trying to do whatever they can for their child really builds a nice relationship. And based on that relationship, therapy is always going to be more effective when everybody's on the same team.
Absolutely.
So I definitely appreciate that. Parents are often confronted with various therapies and methodologies, and not all of them work hand in hand, unfortunately. How would you best guide parents in collaboration across therapies and interventions? Definitely, since you know both ends of the speech and ABA, how would you kind of put those pieces together as far as collaboration?
Yeah, that is hard because, you know, I was just on a podcast yesterday talking about, well, then this becomes an eclectic approach and a buffet of services, which we know is not research-based, is not going to help maximize client outcomes, which is hard. You know, if you're in a clinic and the speech therapist is there and the OT is there and the BCBA is there, there's obviously going to be a more cohesive lens to that therapy. That may not always be the case in a public school because the speech therapist and maybe the outside consultant have different employers. And so they're all coming from a different train of thought. I think what's really important is just trying to embed times for the team to get together. And I think that's important. In a public school, there can be more barriers to that. But I've had parents who, you know, we've had higher profile contentious cases. That's always been kind of my background. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's what I have, you know, all the experience in. And, you know, parents understand their rights. You know, I worked in a very affluent district for 10 years. And so I was always with lawyers, advocates, mediation, outside consultants. And I think one of the things, we had one parent who we would do a progress note every 9 weeks. The BCB outside consultant would do a progress report every 6 weeks and then go over it with the parent. I think that was extremely helpful for the parent. They just needed that. And that parent would also come in and observe once a month. Now, while that put the school team on their toes, but I'm more of a like, come in, let me show you, you know, like I don't mind doing all of that stuff because that's more my personality, right? But you know, knowing your rights as a parent, and that was helpful for that parent. And we had a good rapport with that parent. So another parent might just want to get that progress report every 9 weeks and go, oh, great. You know, every single person is different.
I know that a lot of speech therapists and individuals working with kids with autism use a phrase, helping kids find their voice. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's really our mission at ABA Speech, is that I believe that every autistic learners, you know, has a voice and I want to help them. So I go back to that student that was 18 that had no way to communicate besides using very unsafe problem behavior that was a barrier to not only his learning, but to him being in the community and everything. So I really try to help professionals now with the platform at ABA Speech learn how to help the students who are traditionally hard to help. So whether that means that your student is going to be verbalizing or using a device or using pictures, you really need to make sure that you have a team on board who understands autism, who understands using evidence-based practices, and who is helpful in explaining those things to you. I think that's what's so great about ABA is that we have that parent training component usually when it's insurance funded. And so it's like we have to meet with parents, where as speech therapists, that's not the case. And so if you're an outpatient, you can talk to the parents. If I'm going into home, I can talk to the parents. When you're school-based, it gets a little bit harder and you have to build those bridges. And sometimes school professionals are just so overworked with all the students who need their help that it's hard to do that. But I think as long as you're making progress and independence with communication and making sure that every single student has a response form or a way to communicate independently, should always be our goal for our students.
Based on your experience as far as trying to get nonverbal individuals to speak or to improve their verbal output, is there a timeline that you would say, keep in mind that if this approach is not working for X amount of time, maybe try something else? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. It makes me think of a student that I met, and he was in sixth grade, had lived in another country for 10 years, and he came to us with no way to communicate. He had autism diagnosis, and I thought he would use an iPad, an AAC device, but he could not point. And so we worked on that with the OT, shaping up his point. But in the meantime, we still kind of worked on that, shaping up his point. And then we also worked on sign language and we worked on verbal imitation. And what was absolutely fascinating about this student, and I've done journal articles, presentations, you name it, is that when he started to verbalize, which he did, he was able to say all the same sounds that we say, which is usually not the case for somebody at that advanced chronological age. And so I would say it's really never too late. You know, I've had students who had higher support needs, they were older, and while they were not able to say all the speech sounds, they were able to say some things. And I could tell, I guess it's anecdotally, so it's not science-based, but it was my experience as a clinician that they enjoyed using their voice. They enjoyed working on those verbal imitation targets. So I've had parents say that before, like, hey, can we work on this verbal imitation target? I had a student that was kind of social, but he didn't want anybody in his space. And so his parent wanted us to work on him saying move. And this is a student really had complex communication needs. And part of me was like, okay, this seems like a stretch, but we did, we worked on it. And he was able to verbalize that initial M sound, and he was motivated to say it. So So you never know. I don't think that we should ever give up hope. And I think having this total communication approach is fine. We just obviously, like scientists, need to take the data, need to analyze how it's going. Maybe your child is not going to be a verbal communicator 100% of the time, but that doesn't mean that they can't use their voice for some way. And I don't think that it's ever too late to try that.
That's great. And that gives a lot of hope, knowing that you don't need to give up, right? And if one approach isn't working, maybe another one or a combination might work, looking at all different angles and putting together different components and seeing what works. Sometimes putting everything together creates better connections. And then you start to see progress that you've never seen before, which is fantastic. Definitely the stories tell the story, right?
So yes.
All the experience and all the individuals who you worked with and all the stories that you have tell the story of passion and science and everything together that creates that great interventionist, helping individuals, helping families, and going down the path of progress as steadily as possible.
Yes.
Is there ever a time when you've had to say that your approaches have not worked at all?
Have not worked at all. I think I am always coming from a place of troubleshooting. So I think, you know, when you're working with autistic learners, you're not going to be doing, you shouldn't be doing it by yourself. You know, you should have this collaborative component. So obviously, are there things where you're like, oh, we're troubleshooting that program? Yeah, absolutely. Just like the student who I thought was going to use an AAC device, really, just because that was my bias, he was older. And I really didn't think he was ever going to be able to verbalize in a way that would be understood by unfamiliar listeners. But we just kept on, you know, we did the VB map for that student. And I was able to see him, I saw him in a school, but I was able to see him 3 times a week. Which, even if you know anything about school therapy, that's a lot of speech. So I was able to operate on, you know, nobody bothered me in that district. I was able to kind of do what I wanted for the kids and able to provide the services that they really needed, which was nice. And we just kept at it, you know, but just kind of in the fashion that I do things. I think the most important part of speech therapy is not for me to actually provide the therapy. That is not the most important part. The most important part of my job is to get to know every single member of the team and to be able to share with the team what we're doing for communication, because speech therapy is not something that should just happen 30 minutes a week or 1 hour a week. The most important part is that I build a bridge and I build relationships with people on the team. And I'm just more extroverted. I really like being on a team. I like being able to share those things. It's not always easy, but when you have cases like, you know, my student who, you know, lived in the other country, you know, we had a substitute teacher that came in 6 months after he started and they were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's talking that much. And I was like, the job here is done. I'm going home now. Because you don't always get to have, it's not always that super easy, quick win, right? You know, there's other students that was hard for them and we had to troubleshoot. But yeah, I think the idea is to never lose hope, to try to stay positive. If things are not going well, if the student is not making progress, that we really need to rely on our team. And it goes back to that component of knowing the team, trying to embed times to meet with the team based on whatever that means for your environment.
I love that. Really appreciate the collaborative approach and knowing that everybody has something to add. Also knowing that what you have to share is something that everybody can implement, right? So it's not just, right, again, about those 30 minutes, 3 times a week. It's about everybody utilizing strategies whenever they interact with the student so that it's seamless across the board. And that the expectation is there for some level of communication or response, whatever it might be, which is great. Thank you so much, Rose, for all your input and information about how you use your skills and expertise to help kids on the spectrum. I think that what you've shared with us really tells a lot about yourself, about your commitment and your passion to helping every individual find their voice, like you said, and make progress as much as they can on whatever curve works for them, but steadily and upward. Just a couple of quick questions to end off with, if you're okay.
Yeah.
When you were a child, what did you want to be when you grow up?
Ooh, what did I want to be? I thought I wanted to be like an oceanographer. I'm not sure what that person does, but I live here in Ohio, really far from a beach. So we would go to the beach every year growing up. We'd go to Myrtle Beach and I would cry when I had to leave the ocean. So I thought for sure I wanted to do something with the ocean. But funny enough, my undergrad, I took a 1-credit class called Oceans. because I thought it was going to be easy. And I think I got like an A-, which I graduated summa cum laude. So I was very worried about the grade point average, but it was very hard. It's a, the ocean is very complicated. So I kind of nixed that idea.
That sounds cool though.
Yeah.
Who can you say directly influenced your career choice?
Yeah, I'd say my parents. You know, they were super supportive. My mom gave me that career test and I just knew that that was exactly what I wanted to do. And they were always very supportive of my choices. And, you know, everybody in my family has, you know, a college degree, most have advanced degrees. So, that was very normal for my family, but they were always very supportive.
That sounds great. There's nothing like a supportive family to keep you going on whatever track it is that you chose and keep you even when it's hard.
Yes.
If you had a wild animal for a pet, which would you choose?
Oh my gosh. Well, honestly, I would just love a dog. You know, we talk about getting a Doberman because my son is allergic to cats and dogs. So I wouldn't even go wild animal. I would just, me and my husband talk about getting a Doberman someday. We think that would be really kind of cool. And probably will never happen, but you know, it's fun to talk about. So all the TikToks are, you know, I get all the pet TikToks because that's what I like to watch. It knows me.
Which model car can you see yourself driving when you're 90 years old?
Oh my gosh, when I'm 90. Well, I hope I'm sitting in the back of, you know, like an Escalade or something designer. That's probably what I'd like. Yeah, a driver.
Good for you. And who would you say is your personal hero?
Personal hero. Oh my goodness. That's deep. Yeah, probably just my mom. You know, she's always did a lot, had 4 kids, worked, retired educator, and is still alive and is still, you know, supportive of our family. So I'd say she's the foundation and rock. So I'd say that.
That's great. Thank you so much, Rose, for your time. I'm sure all of our listeners will appreciate hearing your words. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us at Mastermind's Parent Power Podcast, where we aim to support, inform, and inspire parents with children diagnosed with ASD. For more information on how we can best help your child, check out our website at www.mastermindbehavior.com or give us a call at 732-813-7333. We're happy to help.